G'day, welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode the 171th, the Prayer Book Rebellion. My name's Dick Newman, and the election's happened, hasn't it? It's happened. And they're funny people, the Americans. They're in a permanent bloody election cycle. It's either 2 years leading up to the presidential election, and then soon as that's happened, we're into the midterm elections. And then the election happens, and 1 minute past six, they've got to know the result. Can't wait till 2 minutes past six. But it's not going that well for King Donald, is it? Still, he is mounting a legal challenge, and of course, he's got the evangelists on side with their thoughts and prayers.
For angels are being released right now. Angels are being dispatched right now. Hamanda ata ata rata te de baka
sanda ata ambo osa tata rite eke ban. The White House witch doctor there, who is on the case. Yeah, I reckon the Holy Spirit must be Australian because all the words end in A, like ours. Bazza, Shazza, Lazza, Dazza, all me mates there, and Illawarra, Wagga Wagga. Yeah, it's all Australian to me. Let's get on with it with a bit of Jeff Wayne because we're on the eve of war. It was all about Ted Seymour becoming El Supremo, head of the government, and acting a bit like a king. That's naughty. We've let loose some commissioners to smash and destroy images and make dicks of themselves. Tom Seymour, Ted's brother, also wants to be a big swinging dick, but he's looking like a big swinging dickhead. It's been a big falling out between the two brothers. Ted's also been spending big on stupid foreign wars in Scotland to try and force Baby Mary, Queen of Scots, to marry Kitty King Ted. But Baby Mary is now safely in France and betrothed to the Dolphin. 30th of August, 1548. And it's a girl, Mary Seymour. 5th of September, 1548. And Catherine Parr is dead. 7th of September 1548, and Catherine Parr will have one more first. Her funeral will be the first ever Protestant funeral in England, at Sudley Castle, where she is buried or interred, really. In this new tomb, the royal Catherine lies, flower of her sex, renowned, great and wise, a wife by every nuptial virtue known, and faithful partner once to Henry's throne. To Seymour next her plighted hand she yields, Seymour whose Neptune trident justly wields. From him a beauteous daughter blessed her arms, an infant copy of a parent's charms. When now 7 days this infant flower had bloomed, heaven in its wrath the mother's soul resumed. Wasn't that crap? Lady Jane Grey was the chief mourner. In all the confusion that's coming up in a couple of generations' time, the burial site will be lost, then found again in 1782. We'll open it up and have a good squeeze and say, that body looks pretty good after being dead for 234 years. Now that's a lead coffin for you, but some guys who were a bit pissed fucked about with it in 1792 failed to reseal it properly, so by 1817, when we had a look, it was just a skeleton left. We might just tidy up Catherine's baby, Mary. Mary was sent to Catherine's BFF, Catherine Willoughby, to be brought up. Apparently Catherine Willoughby was rather cheesed off for this arrangement. That's not nice, is it? Perhaps she thought Tom Seymour should have taken her, or perhaps it was because Catherine had failed to provide for Mary in a will. Yeah, nobody really likes a broke baby, I suppose. Mary Seymour will simply disappear from all records 2 years later, leaving practical people such as ourselves to assume she died. But it's a feast for people who like to develop theories. Most of the theories we can just debunk, so why bother with them? 2010, Linda Porter wrote a biography of Catherine Parr. She found a book of poems from 1573, written by Catherine's chaplain, which contains a verse that seems to fit Mary. I whom at the cost of her own life my queenly mother bore with the pangs of labour sleep under this marble and unfit traveller. If death had given me to live longer, that virtue, that modesty, that obedience of my excellent mother, that heavenly courageous nature would have lived again in me. Now, whoever you are, fare thee well, because I cannot speak any more. This stone is a memorial to my brief life. Yes, it looks like she died. Tom will return to court, where Ted will try for a bit of a reconciliation, a bit of the old brotherly love there. But without being Mr. Dowager Queen, Tom is really now a bit of a nobody. Earl of Rutland will actually tell him that. I fear your lordship's power is much diminished by the Queen's death. Yeah. Tom will say, no way, buddy. In a couple of years, I'll declare King Ted old enough to run shit himself. Then I shall be the big swinging dick, and my daughter Mary will be way more important than my brother Ted's missus. Oh, it's all about who's most important, isn't it? Lady Jane Grey got sent back to her parents, poor thing, but Tom then has changed his mind and he wants her back. We think he either wants to marry her himself or marry her to King Ted. He's also back to hunting a bit of baby Betty. He's pretending to help her with house hunting, using a guy as a go-between as you do. But the go-between works out what's going on, with Tom asking all sorts of questions about who is at baby Betty's house. And if that isn't a big enough hint, he will ask whether her buttocks had grown any less or not. Yeah, he's still interested in baby Betty's mum, isn't he? Still, Tom knows that Ted won't be allowing any marriages to a lady formerly Princess Number 2 heir to the big chair. Tom will start behaving a bit erratically, and the gossip is out that he's actually baby Betty hunting. Nobles will start to give him hints that he's getting off track, and that this could be very bad for him. Tom will just deny, deny, deny. John Dudley won't hint. He'll get up, Tom, and say, look, mate, you're Lord High Admiral, and for a guy like you, that is really the top. You can't get any further than that, so just give it up. And look, neither King Ted nor I would be governed by you. We let your brother govern us because he is virtuous, loyal, and a rather good administrator. Word's out that Ted Seymour will introduce a bill saying nobles need to leave King Ted alone. Let the professionals raise him. That would mean no more private chats for Tom. So Tom will be saying, I'll be blocking that legislation in the House of Lords. Guys will be totally upfront with him. That would see you in the slammer, you dick. Yeah, well, if Ted tries that, then I'll pop my dagger in him, says Tom. It's getting a bit out of hand, don't you think? Tom is off to try his luck with the 13-year-old Kitty King. Hey, Ted, you'll be right to take over in 3 years, I should think. Now, Ted's been school, so he'll just say no, and he isn't going to talk to Tom about any sort of ruling. Time for Tom to get serious. He's telling his steward to prepare his place at Bewdley as a great house, with large expenses as it was when Catherine was still alive. And he's making some sort of preparations at Hulk Castle, stocking up with lots of beer, beef and wheat. In comes Forger, Sir William Sherrington's dodgy £7,500 into Tom's treasury. He's up to something big, and I don't think it's going to be something good, my dear listener. Now, Tom's already noted the lack of security around Kitty King Ted, saying a man might steal away the king. Bit of a hint there then, isn't it? Tom will get a duplicate key to the Privy Garden Gate. Now, Tom's frequently back and forth to the court in the twilight hours. Secrets are too hard to keep, so Ted Seymour will send a message. Get here, I want to see you. Tom will write back saying, I'll only see you in open council, not in private. 16th of January 1549, we'll see Tom Seymour breaking through the Privy Garden Gate. He's got two servants with him. Off he goes through the palace to Ted's bedroom, opens the door and trips over the dog. Tom, the dickhead, will shoot the dog. Oh, fuck, Tom. Ted's bodyguard will wake up yelling, help, murder, and in come the guards to nab Tom. Oh, well done, everybody, he says. I was just checking on your security. You've all done very well. But the king's most faithful guardian, the dog, is dead. Shot by fuckwit Tom Seymour. Shall we turn to the gossip magazines for cabbage? He had attempted by an unheard of treachery and cruelty to destroy with his own impious hands, in the deep silence of the night, our innocent king. Yeah, that doesn't sound too good at all for Tom. He'll be arrested the next day. Council are looking for evidence. And actually, Tom's state of mind will be okay. They won't hurt me type of stuff, but if they do kill me, then King Ted will revenge me. As time goes by, though, and he's still in a slammer, he'll start to despair. I thought the council were all my friends. No, Tom, the council were not your friends. They were never your friends. They were a bunch of hard men, bloody trying to get themselves advanced like you were. 23rd of February, 1549, and in he comes for an examination. But he won't say a thing unless his accusers are brought in. Oh shit, Tom, it's a treason charge. King Ted will give evidence against Tom. That will do it. If the king's against you, well, you're seriously fucked. Here's Kitty King Ted on record saying, it were better for him to die before. Yeah, you shouldn't have killed the dog, you fucking idiot. Evidence will make it worse. Yes, Tom's had his hand down Baby Betty's knickers, but it isn't straightforward. Baby Betty, her governess cat Ashley, and the go-between Tom Parry will all be interviewed and will all sing the same song. The exact same song. My dear listener, if you ever want to collude with people to all be giving the same message to the authorities, then, look, you've just got to put a little bit of variance in for each of your people, or the authorities will become suspicious that you've actually been rehearsing your testimony. The authorities are suspicious that Baby Betty, Cat and Tom have all rehearsed their testimony. Baby Betty will write to Ted Seymour talking about the shameful slanders against her honour and honesty, and I repudiate this bullshit. The questioning will intensify, and the first to crack is Tom Parry, the go-between, then Cat Ashley, and Baby Betty is furious. Those two will be out of a job. They're sacked by the council. She doesn't even have to do it herself. The council will tell Baby Betty that Lady Purwit will now be a governess. No way, says Baby Betty. Cat Ashley and the Loose Morals is my governess. Baby Betty will cry all night over this. 24th of February, 1549, the council are off to report into Kitty King Ted. Yes, Tom's guilty of 33 charges, and Ted Seymour will say, I know he's my brother, but I am more loyal to you, O Kitty King, and had I done what Tom's done, then I would not think of myself worthy of life. We all wait with bated breath for the Kitty King to speak. What will he say? No, we're not really waiting with bated breath. We all know what he's going to say because we've wrote it down for him beforehand. We don't want to leave anything to chance. We do perceive that there is great things objected and laid to my Lord Admiral, mine uncle, and they tend to treason, and we perceive that you require but justice to be done. We think it reasonable, and we will well that you proceed according to your request. Oh, well said, we all say. How wise you are, Kitty King. Yeah, it's all just a bullshit show. Bill of Attainder will be introduced, passed, unopposed by the Lords, with Ted Seymour allowed to take a day off. He doesn't have to vote. Off it goes to the Commons for a bit of a debate and an argument. Tom Seymour had been allowed to engage lawyers there for his defence. Novel idea. Yeah, lawyers for a treason defence. Still, it will be passed. High treason, guilty. Sentence is death, with Ted Seymour signing the death warrant. 19th of March, and Tom Seymour is off to Tower Hill. Wanting to be a fucker right up to his death, he had fashioned a pen out of a bit of metal and somehow made some sort of ink to write a top-secret message which he hid in the soles of his shoes. He told his servant to retrieve the shoes and the message after his death. Message was to Baby Betty and Lady formerly Princess Mary, telling them to get rid of the Kitty King. That plan won't work. It'll be discovered. Let's get into Tower Hill, and it's a totally private thingy. The mob are simply not admitted. He left a poem behind in his soul. Forgetting God, to love a king, hath been my bod. Or else nothing in this frail life, being a blast of care and strife till it be past. Yet God did call me in my pride, lest I should fall and from him slide. For whom he loves, he must correct, that they may be of his elect. Then death hast thee, thou shalt me gain immortality, with him to reign. Lord, send the king in years as Noy in governing this realm, in joy, and after this frail life such grace, that in thy bliss he may find place. Yeah, full marks from his English teacher, I'm sure. We've had a lot of poetry so far in this episode, haven't we? And none of it's been any fucking good.
It's the first song I ever wrote about.
Is it?
I
have no idea.
Well, sometimes I don't know where this dirty road is taking me. Sometimes I can't even see the reason why. I guess I'll keep a gambling, lots of booze and lots of rambling. It's easier than just to wait and round to die.
Yeah, like Tom Seymour, Townes Van Zandt there, waiting around to die, except he can write good stuff. Kitty King Ted seems to have not given a fig about Tom's death. His diary says, Lord Sudley, Admiral of England, was condemned to death and died the march ensuing. That's it. That's all he wrote. Baby Betty, though, may not have been so complacent. She will say that Ted Seymour should have talked her through with Tom and saved him. But evil advisers convinced him that Tom was a threat to Ted's life. But she's not a love-struck teen, saying, this day died a man of much wit and very little judgment. With the evil advisers, ambassadors and other observers are pointing the finger at Dudley. It was Dudley who urged the arrest of Tom, and Dudley who was whispering to Ted that Tom would kill him. Others also write that Dudley was playing one brother against the other. Now, Dudley has been constantly at Ted's house while Tom was alive, but now that Tom's dead, Dudley's gone home. The mob, though, are calling Tom a bloodsucker and a ravenous wolf, but they are also tying Ted Seymour into this. Out comes the court preacher, Hugh Latimer, to smear Tom a bit more with some public preachifying about what a turd Tom was. I think of his death that he died very dangerously, irksomely, horribly. He was a man the farthest from fear of God that I ever knew or heard of in England. Yeah, Tom's the worst guy ever. For you and I, my dear listener, it might be a case of a guy climbing the greasy pole who didn't recognise where he should have got off. Security will be beefed up for the Kitty King, but Ted Seymour's reputation is in trouble. Some nobles aren't happy that he had signed a death warrant for his very own dear brother. Not done, old chap. Plus he failed to protect the King, and protect is in his job title, isn't it? Lord Protector. His grip on power will loosen and the council will be back in action. We're also noticing just how rich Ted Seymour has become. His reputation as the goodly duke is being replaced by a reputation as, well, just a standard greedy pig, noble, greasy pole climber. He's begun a construction of his own palace, Somerset House. The Church of St. Mary Lestrand and 6 acres of cheap housing for the poor will just be cleared away for his garden, not for his palace, that's just his garden. Other churches and religious houses are smashed up to supply stone for his palace. 2 years into construction and St. John's Church and Bell Tower will be blown up for quarry. St. John's had what is called a charnel house. It's a building where you put bones. Bang, and there goes the charnel house smashed to bits with human bones of prominent citizens now raining down around London. Hit me with the gossip magazines. These actions were in high degree impious, so they did draw with them both open dislike from men and much secret revenge from God. Yeah, Ted's approval rating in the polls has taken a dive. He's said to have stopped attending the Sunday magic show so he can spend time supervising his masons. Now, Ted's salary is around £12,700, let's say £3.2 million in today's quids. But his palace building and lavish lifestyle is costing more than that. Ted's getting into debt. It's not only his money he's spending, the nation's cash is being spent on stupid foreign war in Scotland. Ted will eventually spend over £500,000 on that. We can't recruit all the guys we need from England, so he's paying mercenaries from pretty much anywhere. Italians, Germans, Spaniards, Albanians, Hungarians. He's even employing Irish. Yeah. He spent twice the money that Henry had spent in his last years in half the time. The religious reform is also rushing along, thanks to Ted. We've introduced the Book of Common Prayer into Parliament, and part of that is translation of the top secret Latin Mass into English, with a couple of bits taken out. It's then a work of conservative religion, just translated to English. Yeah, so reformers won't like it, it's too conservative, and conservatives won't like it because it was secret stuff revealed. Although the actual instructions for how to do the magic show are admitted. Oh yeah, otherwise everybody would be turning a bit of bread into baby Jesus, wouldn't they? Or in your home for a party trick. Come over and I'll turn a bit of bread into baby Jesus. The big deal, though, is Cranmer wants to actually give up the bread without yeast entirely. He now simply does not believe the magic show turns bread without yeast into the real baby Jesus. English churchy tops are confused. Now, if you want to introduce change, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you need to lay down a clear set of instructions, and that has not been done. It'll get a bit out of hand, so the council will suspend all new licences to preach. Some parts of England will see churchy types just refusing to do the magic show in English, saying, oh, look, this will all go away soon because the olden day stuff will be back. It's way better, and this newfangled thing is just a temporary fad. William Paget will say to Ted Seymour, are you sure we're on the right track? We seem to be going the wrong way. By January 1549, Paget is upping his advice to Ted. You need to get back on track to being a good regent, mate. February, and it's another letter. Look, Ted, the Frenchies are looking at sending hard men to Scotland. Super Sausage Chuck is totally pissed off with our reformation and we're going fucking broke. Open your eyes and see what's going on. Talk to Chuck. You can just bullshit him for a while. Stop the Reformation because you've gone too far too fast and ditch that common book of prayer with the magic show in England. Send nobles out to all parts of England to deal with any unrest. Bring back basic law and order and tell them to stop calling each other either papist or heretic. Pretty solid advice there. I wonder if Ted will take it. Hugh Latimer is out and about in London preachifying again. It's a Bernie Sanders-type speech about the 1% getting richer. They're all a bunch of greedy pigs, but what perhaps is a bit worse will be this. Woe to thee, O land, where the king is a child. Yeah, well, it's not really new, is it? But it's, we don't really want that stuff being said. The authorities are preparing to introduce the new prayer book, which is being matched by disorder and confusion across England. William Paget is urging Ted Seymour to end Parliament. You're supposed to be the governor, so right now we need you to govern, and these guys need to go home in case there's trouble. So Richard Rich the fucker is warning that law and order is breaking down and rebellion is a reasonable risk. Hugh Latimer is chipping in, saying he's never seen anything like it. Discipline is out the window and it's all out of order. Can we make it worse? Of course, you know we can, of course. Let's do that then. John Hales will have a go at introducing three bills into Parliament. They're about social legislation on landowners, and that will immediately be sent to the shredding machine, with Hales being soundly castigated. Who the fuck wants to tell the mob they have to change even more shit? We will push through a new tax, though. The Act of Relief. Yeah, not much relief for ordinary types. The Act of Relief, which is a poll tax based on the number of sheep you have. The nobility own most of the sheep, so they'll be outraged. They're going to have to pay most of the money. And the common types will be outraged because they can't fucking afford it. And John Hales is totally unpopular. Still going badly was the enclosure thing where the rich people fenced off the common land for their own use. Ted had prosecuted some, but now he's just going to grant them all a pardon. Then a few weeks later, issue a proclamation saying repeat offenders will be punished. He's all over the fucking shop, but at least this one makes him look like he's siding with the common smelly types. Well, the second part was making it look like he's siding with the common smelly types. Riots will break out. Protesters ripping down enclosure hedges saying it was illegal to do so because they'd heard Ted Seymour's proclamation. and told us to get all destructive. That's what they heard. Sounds like the sort of messages King Donald puts out. Disorder is linked directly to Ted. Obviously, it will ratchet up with more and more hedges and fences being destroyed. Sir William Herbert will strike back, sending in 200 hard men to slaughter some common types. Now people want to murder William Herbert. What's Ted Seymour got to say about all this?
But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
Now, of course he won't say that. He'll say that it's the people that are taking the law into their own hands and causing destruction of the fences that are naughty. And a couple of weeks later, he's going to pardon all of them. This is a big, fat, mixed message that will see the mob back into destruction mode. In Kent, where we know they keep their best beer, and it's the place where it's the most easy to upset the mob, isn't it? We get a guy calling himself Captain Commonwealth. I speak with the voice of Hugh Latimer and Ted Seymour. No, you don't, Captain Commonwealth. You don't speak with their voices. There is some good news in this. The mob are intent on destroying the enclosures, but apart from that, they're actually quite well behaved. Where they travel around, they pay for their food and drink and generally act like gentlemen. But with no real action being taken, they will of course ramp up. The nobility will find their deer are being poached. Oh no. Then they start going onto nobles' land, ploughing it up, ploughing up the grass that was sheep food, and planting crops. They hit John Dudley's place and planted a heap of oats, and he's not a happy chappy. Ted Seymour will respond by being a bit more erratic, telling the council that the common smelly types had just cause, and if anyone dared criticise him, he would lash out with one gentleman going to Paget for a good old, oh, boo-hoo-hoo. Ted's being nasty to me. Cornwall, where last year the mob had lynched William Bodie. You might remember that. He was one of the idol-busting commissioners. They're even less happy with the new tax on sheep and woolen cloth, and I'm sure we've spoken about poll taxes before. Always, always, always a bad idea. Rumours are out that Parliament are planning to extend the sheep tax to pigs and even geese. They're not, but the rumours are out. Good luck taxing geese anyway. But it's a rumour, and it doesn't have to make sense. And we don't like having our religion changed. And did you not see William Bodie's dead body? Up the road at Sanford Courtney, northern edge of Dartmoor, the locals will say to their priest, look, mate, we know what Henry's will said. It said no changes to religion until the kiddie king Ted comes of age. He's still a kiddie king, so he can't change religion, so you can't change religion. Fair enough, says the priest, and the magic show goes ahead in Latin. Now, this is the flashpoint for the prayer book rebellion, and of all things to rebel about, magical bullshit must be the stupidest. But I think you've worked out by now, have you not, my dear listener? It's about money. Taxation, enclosures, and commissioner fuckers smashing up our holy statues and windows. This thing, then, was all reasonable, and besides, say our common smelly types, the magic show in English is the sort of thing we do at Christmas. It's not for real. But back to it being all reasonable. A gentleman farmer will say, hey, hang on there, chappies, the magic show in English surely isn't a real big deal. Common smelly types will pop a pitchfork into that gentleman, then hack him to bits. In comes St. Peter Carew to confront the mob. One of his servants will decide to burn down somebody's barn, and that's it. We've got a murder on one side and an act of arson on the other. We can't back down now. That would be reasonable, and we humans are anything but reasonable. Let's start a motherfucking riot. 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 Riot.
From, 'cause you were scared like a little.
Little... Yeah, 3-6 Mafia there, urging calm and caution, or start a riot, one of the two. Common smelly types will barricade villages, block highways, and set traps to capture gentlemen to put in a makeshift slammer. Kitty King Ted will get the news. The mob have rebelled. What he says? Why the fuck would they rebel? Poor Kitty just hasn't got a clue. Nobody had briefed him on anything. Perhaps he should read up on Dick too and go and confront them himself. I say that because Ted Seymour seems like he's losing contact with reality. He will, though, write to Lord Russell and say, come and sort out those rebels at Sanford Courtney, which is a dud idea because those rebels are already marching to Exeter. Not sure why they've gone from Cornwall to Devon. Maybe it's because they want to demand that the scones have bloody cream on top, the dickheads. The rebels have gathered in numbers, as you'd expect, and Ted's troops are all fucking about in Scotland or spread around England looking to keep the peace in all sorts of places. Lord Russell will start looking around for troops, and Ted Seymour is starting to talk about a retreat. If the mob had a brain, which they rarely do, they could have taken this opportunity to march to London, and they might have been successful, but London wasn't on their agenda. 2,000 of them will march to Essex, being led by priests of the old school type. They will recycle the pilgrimage of grace badges and banners. Letters are coming in. Mob to Cranmer, starting with, we will have. Yeah, that's not a good idea to make demands of an Archie, even a weak sort of Archie like Tom Cranmer. Worse, threats. Any who oppose us will die like heretics. Now that seems to be a bit of a threat to set Tom on fire. What's Tom got to say back? Oh, ignorant men of Devonshire and Cornwall, does it stand to reason to turn upside down the good order of the whole world that is everywhere and ever has been? That is to say, you smelly types are governed by nobles, and you better fucking remember that. Will you now have the subjects govern the king, the villains to rule the gentlemen, and the servants their masters? Men may suffer this, but God will not. Those rebels have been busy burning the new Common Book of Prayer, demanding a reversal of all Reformation back to 1539 and an end to the magic book in English, and a return to the magic show in Latin, of course, plus a heap of other bullshit things to do with magic stuff. The rebels are circling Essex, who have wisely shut their gates. The suburbs outside the gates will be taken easy peasy. Highways will be barred. Nobody's getting in or out. Now, food is running out in Essex, and the rebels have smashed up the water conduits to get to the lead pipe so they can turn that into shot. Yeah, we're still using lead pipes for water because we have no idea about lead poisoning. It isn't covered in the magic book. You just turn to the empty page marked information that is actually useful, and you'll find absolutely nothing there. The gates will be set on fire, and that lead from the pipes is being turned into bullets. Ted Seymour will write and say, hey guys, stop this nonsense and I will regulate the price of food. Now just remember that the common types have been suffering from inflation too. 6 days later, he will write saying, put down your weapons or I'll come down there and give you a good kicking. He won't go down there, so it will be a proclamation. All your land is forfeit and I will hand it out on a first-in, best-served basis. Next day, there'll be another proclamation. Seek repentance and get yourself a nice full pardon and exemption from any prosecution or civil proceedings by people you've annoyed. Lord Russell will say, what the fuck is going on here? You're all over the place on this. These guys are getting mixed messages and confusion is what's got this whole thing fucking well started. Has Ted got time to think about this, though? Risings have sprung up in Suffolk, Sussex, Herefordshire, Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire. Ted will call in gentlemen from all around the place to go and sort out the Essex mob. Great, as soon as those gentlemen leave their area to go to Essex, rebellion will break out where they've just left. Various rebels will send their demands to Ted Seymour and he will respond with an offer of pardon saying, of course your concerns are very valid. I'll be getting Parliament right onto it. We'll form a committee. Paget will write again to Ted saying, hey mate, look, this is going totally fucking pear-shaped. You're destroying the goodly Kitty King, subverting the kingdom, and in the process you're ruining yourself. Remember what you promised me in the gallery at Westminster before the breath was out of the body of the king that is dead. Remember what you promised immediately after, devising me concerning the place which you now occupy, and that was to follow mine advice in all your proceedings more than any other man's, which I promise I wish your grace had kept, for then I am sure things had not gone altogether as they go now. If your grace remember, I wrote you a long letter upon either Christmas Day or Christmas Eve that night, which letter I would to God you had pleased to have considered and followed, and to have kept me as men of war keep their spies till they see the effects of their advertisements, and thereupon to have used me accordingly. I was a Cassandra. I told your grace the truth, and was not believed. Well, now your grace seeth it. What seeth your grace over the king's subjects, out of all discipline, out of obedience, caring neither for protector nor king, and much less for any other mean officer? And what is the cause? Your own leniency, your softness, your opinion to be good to the poor. All very sad, is it not, my dear listener? We finally have someone who is thinking about we common smelly types, that is Ted Seymour, but he's a dickhead. The letter goes on outlining Ted's greatest hits that have stuffed everything up. Ted Seymour will respond by appointing commissioners of enclosures to go out, investigate and pull down the legal structures themselves. What say the common smelly types? It's us doing the destroying. What are you guys on about? More confusion in England. There will be more proclamations from the master communicator. Again, it's one this day and then the next day, another one contradicting the previous one. You're all pardoned, then I'm going to toss a lot of you in the slammer. Suffolk, Cambridge and East Anglia are now also into rebellion. Ted will write to Russell saying, it's all going very well. No need for any action. I've got it under control. Then it's similar stuff to the Marquess of Dorset and the Earl of Huntingdon. And, the nobles aren't seeing that out on the ground. They're not seeing that it's all going very well. The Earl of Arundel will try inviting the rebels for a banquet so he can listen to their complaints. Lord Grey of Wilton will kill a couple of hundred of them as a warning to the rest. Other nobles, though, will bring people under control in their areas. Now we need to get to Norwich and meet Grandfather Robert Kett, tanner, farmer. And he's relatively wealthy, so at this stage we've got no idea why he might want to get involved in a rebellion, but involved he will be. Norwich is the next biggest population centre after London, with, of course, a fair share of people living in poverty. 6% of the population own 60% of the lands and goods. We've had a decline in the textile industry, leading to further unemployment. We've had a debasing of the currency and inflation, and life is pretty shit for the poor. Robert Kett then will have no problem recruiting around 16,000 guys with a what-the-fuck-have-I-got-to-lose type attitude. They will set up a camp, declare total loyalty to Kitty King Ted, as rebels tend to, appoint governors and dispense justice. They'll issue warrants for the arrest of gentlemen, and they'll issue those warrants in Latin. They're educated. Trials are held and prison sentences imposed. These guys, though, are different from the other rebels. They like the magic show in English. They can't make up their minds on the magic stuff, can they? They will come up with 29 articles that reflect total loyalty to the government. These guys don't think of themselves as rebels. They think of themselves as helpful. Well, look, with all that sort of stuff, do you think they're getting some help from somebody in the know? Yeah. Robert Kett will also smartly set up communications with other rebel mobs. Back in London, Ted Seymour still thinks everything's going splendidly well. It's all tickety-boo. Mind you, he is a tiny bit bothered about Norwich. These guys are trying to push further reformation, but they'll have to wait for Parliament. Just to be on the safe side, he will get in a private bodyguard for the Kitty King Ted. Let's see, 4,000 soldiers and 2,000 horse. That should do it. Londoners will be, oh no, Ted's killed the Kitty King Ted. Kitty King Ted will have to be brought out and put on a procession to show, no, he's not dead. He'll write in his diary, went on a procession because there was a rumour I was dead. He will also write about how marvellous Lord Grey was for killing a couple of hundred common types. Then he'll go to write one of his first Latin essays. It's about the rebels showing bravery, but their cause is not honourable. Now, Archie Tom Cramer, who is very pissed that his reformation is going off track, will come up to London for some preachifying at St. Paul's. The rebels are all a bunch of cunts, and baby Jesus hates them. No. It is reported that there be many among these unlawful assemblies that pretend knowledge of the gospel, and will need to be called gospelers, as though the gospel were the cause of disobedience, sedition, and carnal liberality, and the destruction of policies, kingdoms, and commonwealths where it is received. But if they will be true gospelers, let them be obedient, meek, patient in adversity, and long-suffering, and in no wise rebel against the laws and magistrates. It's a hit. Cramer will now start instructing other guys to preach stuff like the rebels will be swallowed alive down to hell. London will go on alert. Problems may occur from inside the city by their own pull, or they might come from outside. There will be increase the guard, check on fortifications, all the standard stuff. Martial law is declared on the 18th of July and people aren't allowed to say the R word. I'll say it, rebellion. Public hangings will ramp up. One guy, a bailiff from Romford, will explain to the mob that all he said was many men be up in Essex. But thanks be to God, all is good quiet about us. And that was enough to get him hung. Fuck, that's pretty rough. Ted Seymour is still telling anyone who will listen that it's all going splendidly well. Marquess of Northampton has been sent to deal with the rebels, with Ted saying, hey, look, this is a big fat nothing burger because a delegation of them is on their way to seek the King's mercy and to kiss and make up. At the same time, he's written to Kett and the Norfolk rebels saying, hey, you guys are the good guys. But you've been led astray by naughty papist priests who are looking to bring back old churchy abuses and bloody laws, like burnings. So just surrender, guys. The mob will make a sneak attack on Norwich and take it, with a Royal Herald doing a runner to get the fuck out of there. Yorkshire and 3,000 guys have gathered with their demands. They should be easy to please. They just want the monarchy and nobility ended, and all those gentlemen class can go too. So if you would all just like to fuck off and leave us the money, we'll have a nice communist society. Thank you. Despite Ted Seymour's letter saying everything's just fine and dandy, Lord Russell is getting nervous. Some of his hard men are defecting to rebels. That's a bad sign. He will send the help wanted letter to Ted, who will reply, sorry old chum, you're on your Pat Malone for this dance party. Lord Russell will write back saying, look, seriously, I need more hard men and supplies. Ted Seymour will helpfully reply, look, just don't shoot too many arrows because the rebels will pick them up and fire them back at you. Very helpful, thank you, Ted. In Exeter, in the town, they're baking bread from bran, they're eating horses and generally being hungry. The poor are being given a dull ration to try and keep them from joining the rebels. By the end of July, Ted Seymour is bored with it all. He's had enough. Letter to Lord Russell, get in amongst those rebels and fuck them right over. Okay, let's get on with it. 28th of July, and Lord Russell, together with Lord Grey, will march on the rebels. Pitch battle at the village of Clyst. Shouldn't be too hard. Russell's got professional soldiers, and Lord Grey is saying reinforcements will be here any tick of the clock. But the ticks of the clock go by, and the reinforcements won't turn up. Still, professionals against common smelly types, but these common smelly types are going to show us that they can actually do this stuff. Russell will win on numbers. He's got about 1,000 common types dead with 40 of his guys, but the battle was not decisive. 6th of August, and Grey's reinforcements finally turn up to help relieve the siege of Exeter. In we go, and it's nothing. Rebels had run away. Still, our brave soldiers can gather up cows or whatever food to take into the starved citizens, and we'll get that usual story. Some people then just died from overeating. Letter to London saying Exeter is good and we won a battle. Lord Russell will hang around in Exeter for a week to punish some rebels with Priest Robert Welsh hung in chains from his own church tower, in his magic outfit with his magic toys hanged about him. He can be left to rot. Russell will send Lord Grey and Sir William Herbert off to Sanford Courtney, where the rebels had regrouped. Then they go, with the rebels foolishly doing a runner. There will be chase the buggers, then we'll get Sir Anthony Kingston onto tracking them, and he'll be rather nasty. You don't actually have to be a rebel, just looking like one will be good enough for a summary execution. Some will escape to Somerset, but 104 will be captured at King Weston, then sent to Wells. They'll be hung, drawn and quartered for them. Fucking 104 of them, hung, drawn and quartered. That's a big day's work, isn't it? In Norfolk, though, it's a different story. Marquess of Northampton will turn up on the 31st of July with 1,500 guys. He's been successfully mopping up rebel camps around the place. They have been told not to attack the city, which is in rebel hands, of course, but it was fuck that, so in he goes. Total dickhead move. Our troops aren't trained for urban warfare, and with little windy lanes, they're setting ducks for batshit crazy rebels. A young Lord Sheffield will fall off his horsey and be taken prisoner. Another mouth to feed, so he'll just be bashed to death. Northampton will run away and his guys will panic. Most of the population will decide they need to run away too. Buildings will be set alight and the rebels will get into the usual stuff, rape, loot, pillage. The old regular playbook. Kept in has won the day, but he can hardly say he's the king's representative anymore. Back in London, it'll be panic. We can't believe that Northampton was defeated. More citizens will be arrested and the lucky ones just tossed out of the city. Ted Seymour will outline Plan B. Kidding, of course, he hardly has a Plan A, let alone a Plan B. The council will meet but be uncertain how to proceed. How about you go, Ted? Yeah, nah, says Ted. It will be the Earl of Shrewsbury called to muster, but King Ted is saying it will be under the control of his brave Uncle Ted. Then it will be Dudley as Lieutenant General, and we better put Northampton in charge so we can save face. So it's still making plans on the fly. Who knows why Ted Seymour didn't command the army? He'd actually been pretty successful in France and Scotland, and he might have been the best man for the job. But just as well. To make things a bit more complicated, King Henri of France has declared war on England and laid siege to Boulogne. Dudley will now want to go on sick leave. He might have been a bit more interested in protecting his own house, but that's another handy commander not in attendance. But then he's suddenly back with 5,000 guys to join Northampton at Cambridge. The rebels are holed up there, but their lookouts will report very large numbers of hard men approaching. Dudley will wander up and say, let us in, or you will feel my boot up your bum. Hey, look, everybody can have a pardon except for Kett. It's all going very well, but some boy will drop his dax and perform a filthy act, whatever that was. It's an insult, so one of Dudley's guys will just shoot him. Good shot, and the kitty's dead, and the rebels are not happy at all. Kett will say, I'll go out and meet Dudley, but his own guys will actually stop him. Dudley will say fuck all this fucking about and bring up some cannon to smash the gate to bits. Then we go, and a word of caution about urban warfare. Easy does it, and take care, lads. Dudley will smartly make straight for the marketplace, capturing 49 rebels on his way and promptly hang them. Citizens and their servants will be straight out seeking a pardon, which they'll get. Dudley holds the city, but there are still rebels around. The rebels will organise themselves into three groups and start patrolling the streets looking for enemies, and they'll be successful. Two cartloads of cannon and munitions will be captured, but Dudley still has control of the city and the food stores. The rebels will need to continue their attack. In they come, but Dudley will stand his ground. Fighting intensifies with deaths on both sides, and a fair bit of the place is now on fire. Citizens will be out to Dudley saying, hey, look, you're horrendously outnumbered, so a tactical retreat would be a good idea. No fucking way, says Dudley, who then orders his men to kiss their swords. Now that's army stuff for when you have a no-surrender policy. It's to be defeat the enemy or die, no middle ground. Other troops will hear of this and rush on in to be part of this glorious battle. Night falls and we'll have a nice sleep. Then the next day we'll see a further 1,000 Swiss mercenaries turn up from London. Wah-ha-ha. It's now volleys of gunfire into the rebels and they're doing badly. Kett will have a strategic retreat out of the town to Dussindal, where the fighting will continue all day. Dusk and the rebels will burn their huts and fortifications. What the fuck's this all about, we ask? It's another strategic retreat with the rebels heading to open plain. That's a good sign for Dudley. If he can get up early, they should be in disarray. The rebels, though, will work through the night digging trenches. Their gentlemen captives will be tied together and put out front to be the rebels' first line of defence. In comes Dudley with yet another offer of pardon, but it's no way. We want to see how this thing will work out. Dudley will give a rousing speech about don't think of the rebels as humans, they're just brute beasts imbued with all cruelty. They aren't here to fight, but to be punished, and it will be you who do the punishing, my brave soldiers. Here we go, and the rebels will score first points by shooting the flag bearer. The troops will charge, and fortunately for the gentlemen, they've managed to get the ropes off to escape. Except for some who were in the way of the Swiss mercenaries who hadn't got the memo about don't kill the gentlemen. Yeah, sorry, guys, you're dead. The front rank of the rebels, which includes Kett and the leaders, will run away. Now, oddly enough, the rest will hang around. Usually when your leaders run away, you go with them, but no, they're hanging around. Dudley will be totally impressed with their bravery and offer yet another pardon. A lot of them will yell out, God save King Edward, and surrender. Others will refuse because they want a glorious death, so then we go and kill them. Yeah, good on you, you got your glorious death. Somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 rebels are dead. Dudley lost 40. Among the casualties was Sir Andrew Flammock, who copped a whack to the chest. He was wearing armour, but he was hit so hard that blood came out both his mouth and his arse. Ooh. Kett will head back to Norwich, but his horsey will get tired. He will hide in a barn and be spotted by a couple of farmhands. They'll bring him to the farmhouse and put him under guard, the guard being an 8-year-old kiddie. But Kett has had the fight taken out of him. Off go our farmhands to bring back an armed guard to take him into Norwich. The next day, 9 of the rebel leaders will be brought out to be hung, drawn and quartered, with another 300 copping a hanging. Now, if it had been left to the gentlemen of Norwich, there would have been a lot more. It was Dudley who told them to calm down. Houses in Norwich will all hang the Dudley coat of arms, and Dudley will be very proud. 7th of September, and Kett, along with his brother William, will be brought to London, where they get the sentence that they will be taken from the Tower to Tyburn, and on that gallows hanged, and while yet alive, that they may be cast on the ground, and the entrails of each of them be taken out and burnt before them, while yet alive, and their heads cut off, and their bodies divided into four parts, and that their heads and quarters of each of them be placed where our Lord King shall appoint. The London crowd will miss out on that, though, because they changed their mind and decided to send it back to Norwich as an example to the others. And it will be hanged in chains instead of the other show. Yeah, hard to pick which one is worse, really. 1949? Oh, that's more modern, isn't it, 1949? And we'll get a plaque. In reparation and honour to a notable and courageous leader in the long struggle of the common people of England to escape from a servile life into the freedom of just conditions. Fair enough. But, my dearest listener, I'm not quite finished with the Kett story. It's to the intrigue. Now, Kett was a common smelly type, but not of the broke variety. His motivation to rebel is a bit elusive. He refused to meet with the authorities at Norwich and refused to talk to the Marquess of Dorset. So why did he suddenly want to talk to Dudley at Cambridge? Allow me to give you some more information. Kett was Dudley's tenant. More. Kett's brother worked for Sir Richard Southwell, Dudley's good mate. Southwell was the treasurer of the campaign against the rebels, and Sir Edmund Nybet will notice that nearly £500 of the king's money will manage to find its way to the rebels. Nybet will write a deposition against Southwell, and Southwell will break into William Cecil's house to steal it. Records from the Tower reveal that Kett had only one visitor during his stay, Sir Richard Southwell. The unanswered question then is, did Dudley conspire with Kett to rebel to cause problems for Ted Seymour? Southwell will find himself in the slammer and be fined £500 for writing bills of sedition. Eventually, when he dies, he'll leave £40 to Richard Kett. Yes, it's all very suspicious. To tidy this rebellion up, we need to take a look at Lady, formerly Princess Mary. She's being a bit of a nuisance to the council, who, you know, are reforming like crazy. It's no, no, no for Mary. I'm a Catholic who likes a good old-fashioned magic show four times a week. Now, Mary had gone up to Norfolk just before the rebellion and had to put the heavies on churchy types to do the old magic show for her. The council could give her a damn good thrashing, but she has that big important super sausage cousin who is constantly telling us Mary needs to be allowed to do the old stuff. Chuck will even order his ambassador to get it in writing from the council. And mate, check it out for weasel words, I want a fair dinkum agreement. Ted Somerset will of course agree, and that might come back to bite him on the bum in the future. In comes the common prayer book, with Mary saying, fuck that, and having the old magic show. Council will tell her to cease and desist, though she will tell him to fuck right off. We now have that rebellion, so Ted Seymour will back down and issue a dispensation that she can do the old magic show in the privacy of her own chambers with the lights off and no more than 20 people. We then find a direct link between one of Mary's servants and the rebels, and then one of her chaplains turns up with the rebels, and now one of her servants is the captain of the rebels. Oh dear. Mary will reject the lot of it. These guys got nothing to do with me. One of her enclosures at Kenning Hall will be destroyed, but the rebels will then stop saying, oh no, it's the lady formerly Princess Mary. But then you should also know that the keeper of the estate at Kenning Hall was, did you guess, Sir Richard Southwell? Well done, you. William Cecil will receive more documents about possible Russian collusion or whatever, but nothing will come out of it. And that's the second mention now of new boy William Cecil, and you might know that name. We'll get around to a nice formal introduction, probably next week, I guess. The biggest rebellion since the Peasants' Revolt in 1381 has been brought under control, but with a rather large loss of life. The cost of this little shindig has been £28,000 from a treasury that is already suffering the cost of stupid foreign war. It's been a narrow miss for Ted Seymour. If the rebels had marched on London, then it may have been a different story, and England might be a socialist utopia. We've won, but no thanks to Ted Seymour. And it's not just you and I, my dearest listener, who may have noticed that Ted was more than a bit erratic through this thing. Ted had finished this thing up by being very forgiving to different people who, under other circumstances, may have found themselves to be dead by now. Murmurings are being murmured, and the ear they are going to is William Cecil. Yeah, just a little bit of Derek Trucks there, which should get us into some historical fiction, but I haven't got any this week. I've had a very busy week. Don't ask me what I've done, but it's been very bloody busy. Still, given that the US seems to have avoided Gilead just for the minute, I might just give you this little clip to remind you why that's a good thing.
Second term kicks off with firing Ray, firing Fauci. Now, I actually want to go a step farther, but I realize the president is a kind-hearted man and a good man. I'd actually like to go back to the old times of Tudor England. I'd put the heads on pikes, right? I'd put them at the two corners of the White House as a warning to federal bureaucrats. You either get with the program or you're gone.
Yeah, Steve Bannon there calling for the beheading of FBI Director Christopher Wray and everybody's friend Dr. Fauci. And of course, Steve Bannon's the guy who wanted a Muslim ban because, you know, Muslims do nasty things like behead people. Yeah. So congratulations, USA, for ending that rather nasty rule of the King Donald. Hopefully, still got the legal challenges and the thoughts and prayers to get through. But, of course, you've got in Sleepy Joe, corporate friend, and given him a hostile Senate. So don't expect too much. But for us, it's just a matter of what we go out with. And this week I've been getting into Rag and Bone Man with his song Human. Hope to see you next week. Bye.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Take a look in the mirror. What do you see? Do you see it clearer? Or are you deceived in what you believe? 'Cause I'm only human after all. And you're only human after all. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Some people got the real problems. Some people out of love. Some people think I can solve.